So now we're going to do paper 10, which is on the presentation of the loss allowance for financial assets measured at amortised cost.
Okay, so agenda paper 10, for fee services about the loss allowance and the presentation of same in the statement of financial position for assets measured at amortised cost. And the submitter points out that in accordance with paragraph 551 of IFRS 9, an entity is required to recognise a loss allowance for expected credit losses in respect of financial assets measured at amortised cost or fair value through other comprehensive income, lease receivables, contract assets or loan commitments and financial guarantee contracts to which the impairment requirements apply. And the submitter also notes that IFRS 9 and IFRS 7 go on to provide some additional guidance regarding the recognition of the loss allowance for financial assets measured at fair value through other comprehensive income and also for loan commitments and financial guarantees, respectively, but that there is no such additional guidance in respect of the recognition of the loss allowance for financial assets measured at amortised cost, lease receivables or contract assets. And in addition, the submitter observed that there wasn't any consequential amendments made to IAS 1 in terms of the line items that are required to be presented separately in the statement of financial position as a result of IFRS 9. And therefore the question that they ask is whether for financial assets measured at amortised cost, an entity is actually required to present that loss allowance separately in the statement of financial position. And there's two alternative views put forward. And the first view is that the entity is not required to present the loss allowance separately. And in support of that, the submitter observes that in accordance with IFRS 9, the loss allowance reduces the carrying amount of the financial asset measured at amortised cost in the statement of financial position and considers that that could support there being no requirement to have a separate presentation. And the alternative view then is that you are required to present the loss allowance separately. And in support of that view, the submitter highlights several areas of guidance from various IFRSs, including a number of illustrative examples and references in particular to paragraph BC48P of IFRS 7, which discusses the mandatory use of the loss allowance. And those arguments are summarised in paragraph 20 of the agenda paper. So before setting out the way we've tried to analyse this issue, we'd just like to clarify a couple of points. So firstly, the requirement to recognise a loss allowance is separate to the question of how that amount is treated when determining the carrying amount of the relevant financial instrument and also their associated presentation. And in this regard, we also note that IFRS 9 does set out different requirements for how the loss allowance affects the carrying amount of financial instruments depending on their classification. And secondly, regarding the references made to paragraph BC48P of IFRS 7, we would clarify that these discussions about the mandatory use of a loss allowance account don't actually provide any guidance in terms of how that allowance is presented or how it relates to the carrying amount of the financial asset. So therefore, as highlighted by the submitter, we note that IFRS 1 doesn't contain any requirement to present the loss allowance separately and that IFRS 9 did not make any consequential amendments to that to those requirements. And we also note that neither IFRS 9 nor IFRS 7 requires an entity to present the loss allowance separately in respect of financial assets measured at amortised cost. But we would note that in accordance with IAS 1, paragraph 55, if disclosure or if separate presentation of that amount is relevant to the understanding of an entity's financial position, then an entity is required to make that separate presentation. And it's also important to note that that would be in contrast to the case of financial assets measured at fair value through other comprehensive income and loan commitments, because there is more specific guidance available in terms of the appropriate presentation of the loss allowance in respect of those financial instruments. And the last point that we would make before handing it over to you for discussion is that despite the differences in how the loss allowance relates to the carrying amount or how it's presented, there are disclosure requirements in IFRS 7 which will apply to all loss allowances irrespective of the financial instrument that they apply to. And so that's agenda paper 10.
Thanks, Vanette. In terms of the loss allowance for the financial assets measured at amortized cost, it is not required to be presented separately in the statement of financial position as a minimum. And it is the entity's judgment and decision whether a separate presentation is relevant to an understanding of the entity's financial position. In my opinion, in regards to the importance of the loss and loans to the stakeholders of the financial statements, there is no fundamental change before or after the introduction of IFRS 9. Thus, the entity could follow its previous disclosure on this type of financial instruments in the future to get some consistency. That's my opinion. Thanks.
Thank you.
Maybe just to add to what Alan said, I as well support this view. From a practical point of view, to continue with the existing practice, where necessary, banks are obliged to provide more details in the financial positions, then this is especially required. On the other side, there are a lot of detailed information required in notes and the risk report, especially where this information is available. So I also do not see a need to further provide details in the financial positions, especially as this is then repeated later on in the reports.
Okay, thank you. Graham.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks, Bernadette, for that summary. I generally agree with what Alan and Jorg have said. The only thing I guess I'd add to that discussion is that while I think for financial institutions, there may not be a big difference in terms of the materiality decision between IAS 39 and IFRS 9, there may be other institutions, there may be other entities where the impact of IFRS 9 is larger or introduces new material into the balance sheet that users may now find more meaningful than perhaps they did under IAS 39. I guess only to say that it would be good to reconsider under the new standard whether that is material under the new standard as opposed to under the old standard. I think a refresh of that decision would be warranted.
So say, well, one industry in particular I think is insurance. I'm not sure the insurance folks have always thought about these, expect the loss, the impairment calculations, where they have to apply them, not necessarily everywhere. Anyway, for them to take that refresh, as Graham suggests, I think would be a good idea.
Okay. All right, so, sorry, Chris.
I don't think there's any requirement for anybody to present or even consider presenting necessarily gross carrying amounts and loss amounts is in the statement of financial position. And I think maybe creating a bit of rod for our own back. And, I think I would just follow a logic that the amounts in the balance sheet are the carrying amounts. Mm-hmm. And the carrying amount for an item measured at amortized cost is the amortized cost. And the discussion in paragraphs 54 to 58 is about aggregation or disaggregation. So, you know, you might have loans at type A and loans at type B. Is that one line item or is that two line items? And the issue then is about whether I have one amortized cost total or two amortized cost totals. I don't really read that guidance as saying I need to think about, do I explode the amortized cost into a gross carrying amount and an impairment allowance and I have to present them separately. I don't think I'd object to somebody if they did that, but I don't think that's the judgment that those paragraphs are calling for. Just as the same way I've never heard anybody say, well, I've got some property, plant and equipment. Do I have to consider whether to show the gross cost and the depreciation separately on the face of the balance sheet? Somebody might choose to do that, but I didn't think that was a thought process one would go down. So I would see it's more a voluntary enhancement you wish to show gross carrying amounts and loss amounts separately on the balance sheet. And I think I'd caution there is that if you're going to do that, you should still do it in a way that, in terms of the appropriate aggregation or disaggregation of types of financial assets, that for each type, separate type that you've determined, you should be able to see an amortized cost amount. So if you think that instruments of type A and type B deserve separate line items, then you can have gross amount A, allowance for type A, net carrying amount for type A, and the same for type B. But I don't think you could have like gross carrying amount for A, gross carrying amount for B, and then a total allowance to come down to a total amortized cost for both classes, because that wouldn't I don't think that would fit with the principles here.
John?
I'd agree with Chris. I mean, I think it's right in paragraph 24 to include a reference to paragraph 55 of IAS 1 for completeness, but personally I think the better disclosure is just one number. I wouldn't object if someone wanted to disclose the gross carrying amount and the impairment on the face of the balance sheet, but I personally believe it's a better disclosure just to have the amortized cost, so that the net of the two. And I wouldn't want someone to read paragraph 24 and believe that just maybe if they have an abnormally high impairment charge that would lead you to having two numbers on the balance sheet. I don't believe it would. A long loss is always going to be material, and indeed in some stages significant to financial institutions. And I wouldn't want someone to believe that would mean that you have to go, or that you have to every year consider whether it's relevant or not. My starting point is, I think the most relevant number that should be included in the statement of financial position is the amortized cost, which is the net amount.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not sure that I can fully agree on what was said before. When I look to paragraph 55 of IAS 1, it says that you are required to present additional line items when such presentation is relevant to an understanding of the entity's financial position. And the question is, if that split between the gross carrying amount and the allowance could help the user to understand the financial position, and if the answer to this question is yes, then I think paragraph 55 of IAS 1 tells you to add an additional line item. And to you, Chris, when you compare it with fixed assets, the gross amount and the depreciation, I'm not sure that from an information perspective it's a fair to compare these two balance sheet items, to be honest.
And so I think we're talking here about what goes on the face of the financial,
yes,
the balance sheet, and honestly I don't really think that matters that much. I do think the disclosures in the notes that are all the stuff that's required in IFRS 7, which would require you to break the allowance out,
yeah,
and to show a continuity, is the stuff that Tone is probably talking about anyway.
Yeah.
And I think the problem here is some people have read this paper and think, I don't ever have to tell you what it is if it's small, period. I'm not going to do it on the balance sheet, and I'm not going to do it in the notes either. And you're not saying that at all. We're only talking, the question was only about the balance sheet,
yeah,
not about the notes. So if people think it's small, I can avoid talking about it and never disclose what it is, I don't think that's really an option either. And there are some corporates who would like this answer. I just bury it, and I'll never tell you about it. If it's immaterial, I don't need to tell you what the allowance ever was, anywhere.
Okay, so if we talk about present, we need to say brackets on the face.
Yeah.
Well, I think you make it in paragraph 26, I think you make it clear, regardless of all this,
yeah.
There are all these disclosures in IFRS 7, you're going to have to put in the notes.
Yeah. So far, I know that should be in the summary. Okay. That's good.
Yeah, I was... absolutely just going to make that point that I think we're talking about what's on the face of the balance sheet here, and just to be really clear on that, and to avoid sort of, let's say, overzealous interpretations of showing too granular, you know, for each loan type, you know, for each business type, you know, that's not for the face of the balance sheet. And I think, you know, the way I understand it, it's actually for management's judgment to determine how do they present that information in the most meaningful way. And I don't think that changes.
Okay. Right, so I think it would be good to emphasise the fact that we're not talking about disclosure, a question of disclosure, so irrespective of any of these other statements in the summary, disclosure is always required of loss allowance for all of the different categories of items subject to impairment accounting. So we need to be careful that when we talk about presentation, we're always clear in the note in the summary that we mean on the face of the financial statements. I'm not sure that I would read paragraph 55 the same way Chris has, although I can see his logic given the items that are in paragraph 54. So I'm just trying to think of the best way of dealing with that, which might be get Stephen Martin to see if they give me a signal. Whether we should rather emphasise the general requirements in IAS1 but not refer to a specific paragraph as setting out a requirement, and the general requirements in IAS1 about providing relevant information and back off paragraph 55 as staying a requirement.
I think we should be careful about interpreting IAS1.
Exactly.
Particularly because we're going to be looking at IAS1 in the future anyway, and maybe this is something that we need to think about. Because I agree, I mean, that 55 is not entirely clear as to exactly what it means. So maybe we could feed that into a more general consideration of IAS1 and what we mean about disaggregation on the face versus disaggregation generally.
Could we not include a general statement about people needing to consider what's relevant?
Yeah.
I think that's actually a good idea, Sue. I think management has a responsibility to...
Yeah.
Assume for the overall presentation, is that clear and accurate, and including what's on the face? And if you have a big new standard, maybe you need to think about that.
And but not referring to IFRS, not referring to paragraph 55 and saying that 55 requires if relevant, but rather a general statement about considering what would be relevant. Looking at you, Chris.
Yeah. maybe I'm sort of in a minority on this. I'm not sure. I think to say that management should consider what's relevant, I think, is fine. I don't think.
But you've got a general requirement in IS1 that says financial statements shall present fairly.
Yeah. But I
the financial statements as a whole.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't see what could be unfair about following what I think IFRS 9 is telling you, which is. Items classified as measured at amortised cost are measured at amortised cost in the statement of financial position. So that's the number that's, in simple terms, is in the balance sheet. I'm not sure how that could be, ever be unfair.
But often, and I agree with you, but I am a little bit wary, even though I'm, and I do agree with Steve, that given we've got a project on IS1, I don't think this forum is the one to be opining on what IS1 requires, so I don't want to do that either. But also, when we draft the requirements, we often have in mind the fact that we don't have to put down every single thing you might have to disclose because we're relying on the general requirements in IAS1 as a sort of overall belt and braces good communication message. And so I don't want to sort of ignore its role either.
Maybe one could truncate what is in paragraph 24 a bit, which says IFRS 9 doesn't require the NC present the loss amount separately. However, IS1 requires the entity to consider what's relevant and then not refer to separate presentation. We're just saying, it's not required, but you've still got to think about what's relevant.
I'd be happy with that.
Okay.
Because both practices do exist today, where people break it out or people net it, and I don't know that I think there's a big difference as long as you break it out in the notes.
Okay. But we can confirm that you have to provide the disclosures and there is no explicit requirement to present on the face. We can definitely say that in here, which I think is helpful for people. You're not allowed to do it for fair value OCI. It seems it would be helpful to reinforce that because that seemed to come through a little bit in the submission. And then the general relevant information message. And I think I don't really want to opine on whether or not banks have to do something different, but I think what could be useful to people would be to say the considerations could be different, for example, for a financial institution versus others. I think that's also useful and sort of consistent with the relevance message. Would people be comfortable with that? Okay, no, it's good discussion, fair points. Okay, I think we've earned our break now. We've got through a lot of papers.